The night Alara Wren carried the silver bracelet to the boathouse to accept becoming Luna to Rowan Calder, she heard his own voice rising from the contract crystal. "Take her lighthouse first. When Alara has nowhere left to go, she will crawl back to me." Through the cracked door, she saw Rowan's signature on the transfer papers for her father's inheritance. Beside him stood Malus Voss, wiping blood from his bare chest with the tender ease of a lover. Before dawn, Alara vanished from the Alpha's life, taking the bracelet he never received and a vow that no powerful man would ever decide her fate again. Alara Wren had crossed the tide path in her best blue dress, the hem damp with sea mist and her heart beating so hard she could feel it in her throat. The silver bracelet rested in her palm, warm from her skin. It was old, simple, and far too precious for a girl who had grown up with salt in her hair and debt at her door. Her father had once told her that Wren women did not give silver lightly. A silver bracelet meant trust, a future, a promise made with open eyes. That night, Alara was ready to give all of that to Rowan Calder. For years, she had loved him in silence first, then in glances, then in the kind of quiet devotion that grew between two people who knew each other's wounds without having to name them. Rowan was the young Alpha King of the Northern Pax, feared by rivals and obeyed by men twice his age. Yet with Alara, he had always been different. Softer near the sea, quieter near her lighthouse. He listened when she spoke of herbs and tides. He remembered how she liked her tea. He once carried her through a winter flood when the bridge to the village split beneath her feet. So when he sent word asking her to meet him at the old boathouse before the moon rose high, Alara thought he was finally done waiting. The boathouse stood at the edge of Calder territory, where black water knocked against rotting posts and ropes groaned against the wind. A lamp burned inside. Low voices moved behind the warped wooden door. Alara lifted her hand to knock. Then the contract crystal spoke. Rowan's voice came through it, clear enough to break her open. "Take her lighthouse first. When Alara has nowhere left to go, she will crawl back to me." Her fingers tightened around the bracelet until the silver bit into her skin. For one breath, her mind refused to understand. Rowan had spoken those words. Rowan, who knew the lighthouse was the last thing her father left behind. Rowan, who had stood beside her at her father's grave and promised no one would force her from the cliff while he still drew breath. Inside, paper slid across a table. Alara leaned closer to the crack in the door, though every instinct begged her to run before she saw more. A transfer deed lay beneath the lamplight. Her family name, Wren, stared up from the page like a body pulled from the sea. Beside it was the mark of the lighthouse estate, drawn in dark ink. At the bottom, bold and unmistakable, was Rowan Calder's signature. Then Malus Voss stepped into view. She was beautiful in the polished way of court women, all pale hair and cold grace. Her dark sleeves were rolled back as she pressed a cloth to Rowan's bare chest. Blood streaked down his skin, fresh and red, and he stood still under her touch, as though he had allowed it 100 times before. Malus murmured something too low for Alara to hear. Rowan did not smile, yet he did not pull away. The hurt came so fast it almost felt clean. Then came shame, hot and choking. Had everyone known? Had the Alpha courted the lighthouse girl only long enough to take what her father died protecting? Had every look, every careful word, every almost kiss in the lantern room been part of a trap? Alara stepped back from the door. The bracelet slid from her palm and struck the damp boards with a soft, accusing sound. Rowan's head snapped toward the entrance. For one terrible heartbeat, his eyes fixed on the crack in the door, as if he could feel her standing there in the dark. The bond between them had never been sealed, yet something passed through the air, sharp enough to make Alara's lungs lock. He knew. She waited for him to move, to call her name, to fling the door open and explain why his voice had cut her future in half. Rowan stayed where he was. Malus followed his gaze and smiled faintly, as if she already knew which part of Alara had just died. That was enough. Alara picked up the bracelet with numb fingers, turned away from the boathouse, and walked into the fog. She did not run until the seagrass hid her from the windows. Then she ran as if the cliff itself were burning behind her. By dawn, her room at the lighthouse was empty. Her father's medicine satchel was gone. Her best boots were gone. The silver bracelet was tucked deep inside an old tin box, wrapped in cloth like a wound no one was allowed to touch. Rowan Calder found no note, only the tide path, trampled by one set of footprints leading away from him. And just as the first gray light touched the tower, the lighthouse bell rang once. There was no wind. 6 years later, the old lighthouse no longer stood as a lonely warning above the cliffs. People called it the Green Lantern House now. By sunrise, smoke rose from its kitchen chimney. By noon, the garden smelled of rosemary, damp soil, and drying linen. By evening, soft yellow light filled the windows where the sick and unwanted sat close to the fire, wrapped in blankets, telling stories that changed a little with every telling. Alara Wren ran the place with steady hands and a voice no one argued with for long. She had turned the keeper's rooms into sleeping quarters for old wolves whose packs had forgotten them. The storage cellar became a clinic for widows, fevered children, injured rogues, and anyone else who arrived with nowhere safer to go. The lantern room still watched the sea, yet now it also watched over people who had been pushed to the edges of every map. Alara knew every cracked step, every leaking pipe, every patient who lied about pain to save the last dose of medicine for someone younger. She could stitch a wound through a storm. She could calm a half-shifted wolf with one hand on its brow. She could stare down a pack enforcer until he remembered his manners. No one called her fragile anymore. Some called her stubborn. Some called her healer. A few in private called her the woman who had built a pack without an alpha. Alara never corrected them. The past had been locked away with careful discipline. She did not speak Rowan Calder's name. She did not ask after the Northern Court. When traders brought news of battles, treaties, or the Alpha King's growing power, she found another room to enter. Yet in the back of her medicine cabinet, beneath bundles of dried yarrow and feverfew, sat an old tin box. Inside it was the silver bracelet. Some nights, when exhaustion made her foolish, Alara opened the box and looked at it. The bracelet had darkened with age, though the tiny wave pattern her father carved into the clasp still showed. She never wore it. She never sold it. She never threw it into the sea. That was the part she hated most. A knock came at the clinic door just after breakfast, hard enough to silence the room. Alara was changing the bandage on old Marin's shoulder. The gray-haired wolf blinked up at her, confused by the sound. "Trouble knocks different," Marin whispered. Alara gave him a small smile. "Trouble can wait until I finish wrapping you." The second knock shook dust from the lintel. Her apprentice, Tamsin, hurried in from the hall with a folded notice in both hands. She was 16, all elbows and worry, with flour still on her cheek from helping in the kitchen. "Alara," she said, voice thin. "It has the Northern seal." The room shifted. A widow near the hearth pulled her shawl tighter. A young rogue with a broken wrist lowered his eyes. Even the kettle seemed to stop its soft rattle on the stove. Alara wiped her hands, took the notice, and broke the black wax. The words were formal, cold, legal. The Green Lantern House was under review for unlawful occupation of pack land claimed by the Northern Vale Authority. All ownership records were to be inspected. All medical licenses, charitable ledgers, land maps, and inheritance papers had to be surrendered by the next moon cycle. Failure to prove lawful standing could result in immediate seizure, closure, and relocation of all residents. Alara read it once, then again. The paper did not tremble in her hand. She was proud of that. Tamsin looked at her with wide eyes. "Can they do that?" Alara folded the notice along its original crease. "They can try." By afternoon, she had every ledger spread across the dining table. Receipts, land taxes, patient records, herb purchases, burial expenses, winter grain accounts. Her work had always balanced on the edge of impossible, yet she had kept it alive. Somehow. Then she found the hidden pattern. The largest medicine bills from the past 6 years had been paid before they ever reached her. Rare tinctures, silver burn salves, winter fever powders. Supplies she remembered begging for, then receiving without explanation. Each payment had been marked by the same anonymous donor. Initials only. R.C. Alara stared at the letters until they blurred. There were many men in the world with those initials. She told herself that. There had to be. It meant nothing. It could mean nothing. Outside, wheels crunched over the gravel road. The residents drew toward the windows as a black carriage rolled through the gate, flanked by riders in northern blue. The horses were sleek, the harness silver-studded, the authority unmistakable. Alara stepped onto the porch before anyone could see fear on her face. The carriage door opened. A boot touched the ground. Then Rowan Calder stepped down into the sea wind, taller than memory, colder than winter, and looking at her as if 6 years had been a blade he had carried under his ribs the entire time. For a moment, the cliff seemed to fall silent around him. Rowan Calder stood at the gate of the Green Lantern House with the sea at his back and the Northern Vale banner snapping above his carriage. He was no longer the young alpha who had leaned against the lighthouse wall and listened while Alara spoke of weather signs. Time had carved him into something sharper, broader shoulders, darker eyes, a stillness that made even the guards behind him careful with their breathing. A long scar ran along the side of his throat, pale at the edges and ugly at the center, as if a silver blade had once tried to open his voice and failed to finish the work. Alara saw it before she could stop herself. Then she forced her gaze back to his face. "Alpha Calder," she said. His jaw tightened at the title. "Miss Wren. Miss Wren." Once he had called her Lark when he thought no one could hear, because he said she made even the worst mornings sound survivable. The memory rose too quickly, tender and cruel, and Alara buried it before it showed. Behind Rowan, Melis Voss stepped from the carriage with a leather case tucked beneath one arm. 6 years had only refined her beauty. Her pale hair was pinned at the nape of her neck. Her gloves were pearl gray. Her smile carried the practiced warmth of someone who had never once entered a room without measuring how to own it. "Alara," Melis said gently, "I wish our reunion had kinder circumstances." Alara looked at the case in her hand. "You brought circumstances with you." A faint spark passed through Melis's eyes, gone almost as soon as it appeared. "I am here as contract seal officer for the Northern Vale. All documents will be reviewed according to pack law." "Pack law did not build these walls," Alara said. "Hungry hands did. Grieving hands did. Mine did." Rowan's gaze moved over the porch, the hanging herbs, the patched roof, the old wolves gathered behind the windows. Something flickered in his expression, too fast to name. Then Melis opened her case. One by one, she drew out forms, maps, summons papers, and sealed requests for inspection. Her movements were smooth, efficient, and quietly possessive. Every page passed through her hands before Rowan saw it. Every question she asked was polite enough to hide a hook. Alara led them inside because refusing would only give Melis more power. The Green Lantern House smelled of broth, medicinal roots, and sea-washed wood. Rowan paused just inside the hall. His eyes lifted toward the staircase that led to the lantern room, then to the old family portrait still hanging crooked near the pantry. Alara's father stood in that picture, one hand on the lighthouse rail, smiling as if debt and sickness had not already begun to chase him. Rowan looked away first. Alara noticed. She hated that she noticed. In the dining room, Melis spread the inspection papers across the table where Alara had spent the night sorting ledgers. "There are irregularities in the boundary records," she said. "The lighthouse sits over a spring and tide channel historically claimed by the Northern Packs. If the original debt transfer is valid, ownership may have shifted years ago." The word struck with old force. Debt transfer. Ownership shifted. Years ago. Alara's hands curled against the back of a chair. "So, this is where it ends. You came to finish what you started in the boathouse." Rowan went still. Melis lowered her eyes as though embarrassed for them both. "This is a legal matter." Alara turned fully to Rowan. "Was it legal when you signed away my father's house while I stood outside the door?" The room chilled. A spoon clattered somewhere near the kitchen. Tamsin froze in the archway, carrying a tray she had forgotten how to set down. Rowan took one step toward Alara. The scar on his throat darkened, a thin line of red opening at its center. "Alara," he said, and the single word came rough, scraped raw. Old Marin, sitting near the hearth with a blanket over his knees, suddenly lifted his head. His cloudy eyes locked on Rowan's face. His fingers began to tremble. "The boy," Marin whispered. Alara glanced back. "Marin!" The old wolf stared as if the years had peeled away in front of him. The boy who ran through fire. Rowan's face changed. Only a little, enough. Melis closed the nearest folder with a crisp snap. "Mr. Marin is unwell. We should continue before confusion disrupts the record." But Marin was breathing hard now, clutching the blanket to his chest. Fire on the lower road, smoke in the boathouse. He carried something, burned all here. He slapped weakly at his chest. "Wouldn't let go." Alara's pulse began to beat in a strange, uneven rhythm. Rowan did not look at Marin. He looked at Alara, and for the first time since he stepped from the carriage, the coldness around him cracked. Pain moved through his eyes with such naked force that she almost took a step back. Almost. She held her ground. "Tell me," she said, voice low. "Tell me what happened that night." Rowan's mouth parted. The scar along his throat split wider, and blood slid down beneath his collar. His hand rose to cover it, but he made no sound. Alara stared at the blood. Melis reached for a clean cloth before anyone else moved, her expression calm, her gaze fixed on Rowan with warning hidden behind concern. And Alara felt, for the first time in 6 years, that the door she had closed on that terrible night might have locked something inside with him. By noon, the Green Lantern House no longer felt like a refuge. It felt like a room waiting for judgment. Melis Voss sat at the dining table with the lighthouse deeds arranged in neat lines before her. Alara had seen healers lay out surgical blades with less precision. Every page seemed chosen to cut. Rowan stood near the window, silent, broad-shouldered, his collar buttoned high over the bleeding scar at his throat. The residents watched from corners and doorways. Old wolves who had survived famine, exile, and winter fever now looked afraid of ink. Melis tapped one gloved finger against a boundary map. "The problem is simple. The lighthouse property was never fully cleared after Gideon Wren's debts were transferred. The charitable use of the house does not erase the question of lawful ownership." Alara kept her voice even. "My father left this land to me." "He left you a claim," Melis said. "A claim can be challenged." Tamsin made a small sound near the hearth. Alara did not turn. If she looked at the girl's frightened face, her anger might break its leash. Melis continued, "Unless you can prove clean title before the new moon, the Green Lantern House may be closed pending seizure. The residents will be relocated under Northern Vale discretion." "Relocated where?" Alara asked. "To approved facilities." "There are no approved facilities within 3 days of the coast." "That is unfortunate." The word landed softly and still managed to bruise. Rowan finally spoke. "There is another option." Alara looked at him. So did everyone else. He held her gaze for a moment, then glanced at the papers. "Place the lighthouse under temporary protection of my pack. I can shield it from seizure until the court reviews the older debt records." A laugh rose in Alara's chest, sharp enough to hurt. She swallowed it down. "Under your protection?" "Yes. Your banner over my door, your men at my gate, your name on my records." His eyes darkened. It would keep them here. It would make me dependent on the same Alpha who signed his name beneath my father's inheritance. The room went quiet enough for the gulls outside to sound cruel. Rowan's jaw flexed. "You think I came all this way to watch old wolves get thrown into rain? I think powerful men always find noble words for taking keys from women." Something moved across his face then. Pain, anger, restraint. Alara hated that she could still read him in fragments. She hated more that none of the fragments made sense. Sometimes a person can stand right in front of the truth and still see only the shape of their old wound. Alara had built a whole life from that wound, so who could blame her for guarding it like a door? By late afternoon, the matter went before the temporary pack board Melis had assembled in the old meeting hall beside the village chapel. Alara stood alone on one side. Melis stood with her seals, clerks, and calm little smile on the other. Rowan sat at the center, his title making him both witness and blade. Alara requested an extension to gather missing records. Melis opposed it. One elder abstained. One sided with Melis. Then all eyes turned to Rowan. He did not look at Alara when he cast his vote. "Denied," he said. For a heartbeat, she heard the boathouse again. His voice in the crystal. His words, cold and damning. Take her lighthouse first. Something inside her went still. Mylis bowed her head, hiding satisfaction. Then the closure order remains active. Final proof must be presented before the new moon. Alara walked back to the Green Lantern House under a sky the color of bruised pearl. No one followed her. No one dared. That evening, while the residents slept badly and the sea dragged stones against the shore, Alara sat at the dining table with the copied order and a lamp burning low. She read Rowan's vote again because anger needed something to chew. Then she saw what grief had made her miss. His denial had not closed the file. It had removed Mylis from final authority and transferred the case to the Court of Tides, where forbidden contracts, hidden debt transfers, and alpha oaths could be examined under moon law. Alara stared at the line until the flame wavered. Had Rowan just struck her down in public to save her in private? Before she could answer, the lighthouse bell shivered above her head, once, faint and hollow, as if something trapped inside it had woken. The storm arrived 3 nights before the new moon. It came off the sea like a living thing, black-backed and furious, throwing rain against the windows hard enough to make the old glass cry. By sunset, the road had vanished under mud. By moonrise, the outer sheds were rattling on their hinges, and the lantern at the top of the lighthouse began to flicker. Alara felt the first break in the light from the clinic below. Every wolf in the house felt it too. The lighthouse beam was more than a warning to ships. It marked safe passage through the coastal wards. Without it, any wounded rogue, widow, or child crossing the cliffs in that storm could wander straight into the northern boundary traps. Tamsin ran in, soaked from the stairwell. The lens gear jammed. Alara grabbed her tool belt. Keep the lower fires burning. No one goes outside. A shadow moved near the front door. Rowan stood there in a rain-dark coat, water dripping from his hair onto the floorboards. He must have ridden through the storm. His face was pale under the lantern glow, but his voice held steady. The tide chain snapped near the west brace, he said. You need 2 hands at the lens and 1 at the counterweight. I did not ask for your help. The light is dying. That ended the argument because it was true. They climbed the spiral stairs together, the tower groaning around them. Wind forced itself through cracks in the stone and carried the salt smell of the open sea. Alara moved fast, 1 hand on the rail, the other clutching her tools. Rowan stayed just behind her, close enough that his heat brushed her back each time thunder shook the tower. In the lantern room, the great lens stood half-turned, its green glass darkening at the edges. The flame sputtered in the housing. The brass gear beneath it had jammed against a warped tooth. Alara dropped to her knees and worked the panel open. Hold the counterweight steady. Rowan took the chain in both hands. The muscles in his forearms tightened as he bore the drag of the lens. Rain lashed the glass walls around them. Lightning burst across the sea, turning his scar silver white for an instant. Alara's breath caught before she could stop it. She remembered those hands gentler. Rowan brushing soot from her cheek after the midsummer bonfire. Rowan lifting a fallen gull chick back into its nest because she asked him to. Rowan almost kissing her in this very room while the lens turned slow and golden around them. The past had no mercy. It knew exactly when to return. The gear slipped. Alara reached too fast. Her hand struck hot brass and she hissed. Rowan released 1 hand from the chain long enough to catch her wrist. You're burned. It's nothing. He turned her palm toward the light with a tenderness so familiar it made her throat ache. You still lie badly when you're hurt. And you still speak gently when you want something. His thumb stilled over her pulse. The lens groaned above them. Rowan let go first. He caught the chain again, shoulders braced, teeth clenched. Alara forced the gear loose, reset the pin, and shoved the lever down. The great lens turned. The green beam swept across the storm, dim once, then brighter, then blazing over the cliffs. The house below erupted in relieved voices. Alara closed her eyes for 1 breath. When she opened them, Rowan was watching her as if the light had returned to his chest, too. Why did you pay the medicine bills? She asked. His expression changed. I saw the ledgers, she said. 6 years of anonymous payments, rare salves, fever powders, winter stock. Was that guilt? The scar at his throat pulsed. Alara, he said roughly. I did not take your house. Blood welled along the scar before he could say more. He grabbed the edge of the lens frame, breath turning harsh. Red slipped between his fingers and ran down his collar. For one dangerous second, Alara forgot every accusation. She moved as a healer, not as the woman he had hurt. She pressed a clean cloth to his throat and felt his pulse hammering beneath her hand. Stop talking, she said. His mouth curved faintly, filled with pain. You used to like when I talked. I used to like many foolish things. He leaned closer because the storm left them little room, or maybe because neither of them moved away. The scent of rain, smoke, sea salt, and Rowan's skin surrounded her. It would have been so easy to remember only the boy he had been. How dangerous was a heart that could bleed for the same man who broke it? Alara stepped back before longing could betray her. His sleeve caught on a cracked brass hook near the lens. A folded piece of oilskin slipped from inside his cuff and fell at her feet. Rowan reached for it, too slow. Alara picked it up and unfolded it. Inside lay an old map of the lighthouse foundation, marked in her father's careful hand. Beneath the tide cellar, where no public plan showed anything but stone, Gideon Wren had drawn a hidden chamber. At the bottom corner was her father's signature, and beside it, in dark ink, was one word: trust. By morning, the storm had passed, but it left the Green Lantern house wounded. Two shutters hung broken. The herb garden lay flattened under salt water. A crack had opened in the east wall of the cellar, thin as a finger and wet around the edges. Alara should have cared about all of it at once. Instead, her thoughts kept returning to the oilskin map locked beneath her pillow. Her father's signature, a hidden chamber. The word trust. Rowan had carried that map in his sleeve like a secret he could neither surrender nor explain. When Alara demanded answers in the lantern room, blood had poured from his throat. When she asked where he found the map, he only touched the scar and shook his head with rage, trapped behind his teeth. So she sent him away before pity could soften her. That should have made her feel stronger. It did not. At breakfast, old Marin refused his porridge and stared at the cold fireplace. His hands trembled around his spoon. Smoke's wrong, he muttered. Alara sat beside him. There is no smoke today. Wrong night, Marin said. His cloudy eyes moved to her face, then past her, as if watching a door no one else could see. Boathouse burned. Men shouting. Silver salt on the floor. Your father's books crying like wet birds. Alara went still. Tamsin, standing near the stove, slowly lowered the bread knife. What books? Alara asked gently. Marin's breath hitched. The young Alpha ran in. Fool boy. Flames on the beams, flames on his coat. Came out with his chest burned black and a book under his arm. Wouldn't drop it. They told him drop it. His fingers clawed at the blanket. He said Wren debts were written there. Said without it, they would take the girl's light. The room seemed to tilt. Alara gripped the edge of the chair. Marin, did this happen the night my father's transfer papers were signed? The old wolf blinked, lost for a moment. Then tears filled his eyes. I was drunk by the nets. I thought I dreamed it. Malus had a crystal. Pretty lady with dead eyes. She said the right piece would be enough. A cold line moved down Alara's spine. The right piece. The recording she heard through the boathouse door had always felt too clean, too perfectly cruel. She had never questioned that because pain loves simple evidence. Pain accepts the blade and rarely asks who sharpened it. What was the book called? Alara whispered. Marin's lips moved. No sound came at first. Then with effort he said, The Tide Debt, Ledger. Alara knew the name. Every coastal family knew it in the way people knew curses. The Tide Debt Ledger recorded old maritime loans, tide rights, rescue debts, spring claims, and blood-bound payments made before pack law became civilized enough to hide its teeth. Her father had searched for it during the last year of his life. After he died, everyone said it had been lost. If Rowan had saved it, why had he let her leave? If he had protected her inheritance, why had his own voice become the rope that strangled her trust? That afternoon, Alara and Tamsin searched the cellar using her father's map. The hidden chamber beneath the tidestones remained sealed, its entrance locked behind a mechanism older than the lighthouse stairs. They found scratches near the foundation wall and a rusted hook shaped like a crescent moon, but no ledger. Near sunset, Tamsin climbed to the bell frame to check the damage from the storm. Alara was in the clinic below, grinding willow bark, when the girl screamed her name. She ran up the stairs two at a time. Tamsin stood beneath the great bell, pale with excitement, holding a narrow strip of waxed paper. "It was tucked inside the clapper housing," she said. "I only found it because the storm cracked the bolt." Alara took the page carefully. The writing was water-stained, but still readable. Her father's hand filled the top half. Another hand had added notes beneath it, darker, more recent, controlled under pressure. The page listed a debt transfer from Gideon Wren to a private creditor, then a second purchase of that debt by Rowan Calder. At the bottom, beside a smear of old blood, someone had written, "Original crystal hidden where the fog voice sleeps." Alara looked up at the bell, and its bronze mouth hung over her like a waiting secret. The fog voice. The old fog bell. Below them, hooves struck the wet road outside. A rider had arrived hard and fast through the last of the storm wash. Tamsin peered from the window. "It's from the Court of Tides." Alara folded the page into her palm. For the first time in 6 years, the truth felt close enough to fear. The rider from the Court of Tides brought a summons wrapped in blue wax and tied with a strip of seagrass. Alara broke the seal in the entry hall while the residents watched from the stairs, the kitchen doorway, and the clinic beds. The court had accepted Rowan's transfer request. A hearing would be held under the new moon, and until then, the Green Lantern House could remain open. A breath moved through the house like the first warm wind after winter. Alara should have felt relief. Instead, she felt Melis Voss tightening somewhere in the distance like a drawn wire. By dusk, Alara had locked the ledger page in her medicine cabinet and sent Tamsin to sit with Marin. She was checking the storm damage along the west porch when Melis arrived alone. No carriage, no guards, no Rowan. Just Melis in a dark cloak, standing beneath the dripping eaves with rain beads shining in her pale hair. "Alara," she said, soft as silk. "May I speak with you privately?" Alara almost laughed. "That depends on whether you brought another order to ruin my day. I brought a solution." Of course she had. Alara led her into the small receiving room off the clinic, where dried lavender hung from the beams and the old stove gave off tired heat. Melis removed her gloves finger by finger, taking her time as if the room already belonged to her. "I know what you think of me," Melis said. "I doubt you do. You think I'm Rowan's loyal knife." Alara stood by the door. "Are you asking me to admire the handle?" Melis smiled faintly. "I'm asking you to be practical. The hearing will be ugly. The Court of Tides enjoys truth, yet truth comes wrapped in teeth. If you fight, every debt your father ever owed will become public. Every patient record could be questioned. Every unauthorized healing performed in this house may be used against you." Alara's stomach tightened, though her face did not change. "And here comes your kindness. I can buy the Green Lantern House before the hearing." Melis drew a folded contract from inside her cloak. "At a generous price. You would remain as chief healer. The elderly stay. The widows stay. The children stay. I will even fund your medicine stores for the next 10 years. 10 years. Enough fever powder for every winter, enough clean bandages, enough food that no one would pretend to be full after half a bowl of soup." Melis knew exactly where to press. Alara looked at the contract without touching it. "And the lighthouse?" "Protected. By you. By someone who understands law better than sentiment." There it was, polished and poisoned. Alara walked to the window. Beyond the glass, the fog bell sat low near the rocks, dark against the sea. Somewhere inside it, a page from her father's ledger had waded through storm and silence. "What do you really want under my house?" Alara asked. Melis's expression remained calm, yet one breath left her too slowly. "I want to keep order." "You want the spring. A spring under Packland belongs to the pack. My father built this house before your pack remembered the coast existed. Your father borrowed against things he could not hold. Ilara turned back. You know a great deal about my father's debts. I know a great deal about Rowan's mistakes. At the sound of his name, the room sharpened. Melis stepped closer, lowering her voice as though sharing a secret between women who had both survived the same man. He has always used devotion as a leash. Women, elders, soldiers, even you. He lets people believe they are his weakness, then moves them where he needs them. Ilara wanted to reject the words. Some part of her still recognized their shape from the wound Rowan left behind. That was the cruel thing about a lie mixed with fear. It did not need to be strong, only familiar. Melis placed the contract on the table. Sell before the court forces you to kneel. Ilara looked down at the signature line. Then Melis added, almost gently, You kept the moonlet all these years, didn't you? Ilara's blood turned cold. Only one person had ever called the silver bracelet that. Rowan had named it the moonlet on a summer night in the lantern room, after he caught sight of it beneath Ilara's sleeve. He had teased her, saying it looked like a small moon brave enough to circle a girl who feared nothing. Ilara had never spoken that name aloud to anyone. Slowly, she raised her eyes. Melis realized her mistake half a second too late. How do you know that name? Ilara asked. Melis's smile returned, but now Ilara could see the crack beneath it. Rowan speaks carelessly when he trusts someone. No, Ilara said. He does many foolish things. That was never one of them. For the first time, Melis looked less like a court officer and more like a woman standing too close to a locked door she had once opened. Ilara pushed the contract back across the table. Take your sweet offer and choke on it. Melis gathered the papers with careful hands. The new moon will not be kind. Then it will suit you. After Melis left, Ilara went to the medicine cabinet and opened the old tin box. The silver bracelet lay inside, dim and patient. The moonlet. Ilara touched it with one finger, and the past shifted under her feet again. Melis had heard that name somewhere. Or worse, she had kept a piece of a memory that had never belonged to her. The Court of Tides met where the river entered the sea, in a stone hall built half over water. At low tide, black rock showed beneath the floor grates. At high tide, waves struck the pillars with the deep, steady sound of a giant heart. The old Pax believed no lie could survive long in that room because the sea listened from below. Ilara hoped the sea had good hearing. She arrived with Tamsin, Marin, and two elders from the Green Lantern House. Rowan came separately, dressed in black with the Northern Veil crest pinned at his shoulder. Melis entered beside him as contract seal officer, her face composed, her throat bare, her hands hidden in pale gloves. The new moon left the windows dark. Three judges sat beneath a carved arch of driftwood and bone. The center judge, an old woman with silver eyes, read the matter aloud. Boundary challenge, debt transfer. Possible unlawful seizure. Possible charitable exemption. Possible alpha interference. Every word made the house Ilara had built sound less like a home and more like prey being measured. Melis presented first. She spoke beautifully. That was the worst part. Calm, clear, almost regretful. She laid out the debts of Gideon Wren, the old maritime claim, the transfer papers bearing Rowan's signature, and the legal uncertainty surrounding the lighthouse spring. Then she placed a small crystal on the evidence stand. Ilara's body knew it before her mind did. The boathouse returned in a rush of lamp smoke, wet boards, and Rowan's voice cutting her open. Melis bowed to the judges. This recorded statement was recovered from the original negotiation. It confirms Alpha Calder's intention to acquire the Wren lighthouse. The crystal glowed. Rowan's younger voice filled the hall. Take her lighthouse first. When Ilara has nowhere left to go, she will crawl back to me. A murmur passed through the benches. Tamsin whispered, Ilara. Ilara did not move. She stared at the crystal until the light stung her eyes. 6 years had passed, and still that sentence knew where to place its knife. Rowan stood so fast his chair struck the floor behind him. That is incomplete, he said. The center judge looked at him sharply. Alpha Calder, do you challenge the evidence? Yes. Melis's gaze slid toward him. Rowan gripped the edge of the table. The recording was cut. Melis, his voice broke. The scar along his throat tore open as if an invisible hook had ripped through it from within. Blood spilled over his collar. The hall erupted in alarm, but Rowan stayed standing, shaking with the effort to force one more word out. "Malus," he tried again. "More blood." Alara took a step before she could stop herself. Malus moved quicker, pressing a cloth to his throat. "Alpha Calder has a chronic silver injury," she told the judges, voice perfectly controlled. "Stress worsens it. I request that his physical condition not be mistaken for legal relevance." Rowan shoved her hand away. The old judge leaned forward, her silver eyes narrowed. "Alpha Calder, are you under any speech restriction?" Rowan's lips parted. Nothing came out. The hall changed. Whispers began, low and horrified. Speech restrictions were used for traitors, spies, and debt servants. To bind an alpha's throat was forbidden under moon law unless the alpha consented before witnesses. No witness had ever been named. Alara looked at Rowan's blood on the floor. 6 years of silence gathered around it. The judge turned to Malus. "Seal Officer Voss, has any contract involving Alpha Calder's speech been filed with your office?" "No, Your Honor." Her answer came too quickly. The judge heard it too. "Then we will examine the source crystal in full," the judge said. "Produce the original." Malus lowered her head with the sadness of a woman forced to disappoint justice. "The original was destroyed in a fire 6 years ago. What remains is the authenticated copy." Maren began trembling beside Alara. "No," the old wolf whispered. "Fog voice sleeps." Alara put a hand over his. "Easy." But the judge heard him. "What did he say?" Maelis turned. "A confused patient, Your Honor." Maren looked at Alara, his cloudy eyes suddenly clear with terror. "The fog voice sleeps. The page in the bell. The hidden line. Original crystal hidden where the fog voice sleeps." Alara's heart slammed against her ribs. The judge struck the driftwood staff once against the stone. "This court will recess until dawn. If the original crystal exists, it must be produced. If it does not, the copy remains admissible." Malus's mouth curved just barely. Rowan sat down heavily, blood soaking the cloth at his throat. He looked at Alara across the hall, unable to speak, unable to explain. And for the first time, she saw the shape of the cage around him. The cruelest prison is sometimes built from one sentence everyone thinks they understand. Alara turned to Tamsin. "We are going to the fog bell." Outside, the tide was rising. The path to the fog bell was slick with seaweed, rain, and moonless dark. Alara carried a lantern in one hand and her father's torn ledger page in the other. Tamsin followed with a coil of rope over her shoulder. Maren came between them wrapped in two coats, stubborn as an old root and shaking with every step. "I should have remembered sooner," he kept saying. Alara slowed for him. "You remembered when it mattered." The fog bell stood on a stone platform below the lighthouse, built for mornings when mist swallowed the cliff and ships needed sound more than light. It had not been used in years. Rust streaked its frame. Barnacles crusted the lower bolts. When the wind passed beneath its bronze mouth, it gave a faint, hollow moan, like a sleeper dreaming badly. Tamsin lifted the lantern. "Where would someone hide a crystal in that?" Alara looked at the line again. "Where the fog voice sleeps." "Inside the striker chamber," she said. The storm had cracked one of the outer bolts, which was the only mercy the night offered. Tamsin wedged a chisel beneath the inspection plate while Alara held the lantern close. Maren stood behind them, whispering old fragments under his breath. "Pretty lady with dead eyes, silver salt, cut from here." The plate came loose with a shriek of metal. A smell rolled out, bitter and cold. Silver salt. Alara covered her mouth. Tamsin backed away with a hiss, her wolf senses stung by the sharp mineral burn. Inside the chamber, tucked behind layers of waxed cloth and packed salt, something pulsed with a faint blue light. The crystal. For 6 years, it had slept inside the bell where no wolf could sense it through the silver. Hidden in plain sound, buried inside the one thing that could shout over the sea. Alara wrapped her hand in cloth and lifted it free. The crystal was heavier than she expected. Cold, too, as if it had been holding winter in its heart since the night she left. Marin began to cry. They took it back to the Green Lantern house because dawn was still hours away, and the court would not wait. In the kitchen, with the residents gathered in robes and blankets, Alara placed the crystal in a bowl of fresh water to draw out the silver salt. The blue light strengthened. Rowan arrived before sunrise. He looked as if he had ridden through pain. His throat was bandaged, his face drawn, his eyes fixed on the crystal, with such fierce hope that Alara had to look away. Melis came after him with two court guards, her composure thinner than usual. "This is highly irregular," she said. Alara lifted the crystal from the water. "So was hiding evidence in my fog bell." Melis said nothing. At dawn, the Court of Tides reconvened. The original crystal was placed on the evidence stand. The old judge touched it with a silver-tipped rod, then nodded. "Uncut. Bound to the night in question. We will hear it in full." The hall held its breath. The crystal glowed. Rowan's younger voice emerged, rough with exhaustion. He said, "Take her lighthouse first. When Alara has nowhere left to go, she will crawl back to me." Alara stopped breathing. The voice continued. "That was Lord Varric's threat. Record it. Seal it. I swear on my blood and my crown, I will not let him touch Alara Wren." A sound moved through the hall, shock breaking into whispers. The crystal crackled. There were footsteps, a crash, Rowan coughing hard, and Melis's younger voice close to the crystal. "Careful, that line will ruin the creditor." Rowan answered, "Good." Then came Melis again, lower this time. "Cut from here is enough." The recording ended. Silence swallowed the hall. Alara stared at the crystal. The sentence that had destroyed her life had been a stolen fragment, sharpened by omission and placed where she would bleed from it. Rowan had spoken the words, yes. He had spoken them as evidence. He had been trying to save her. Across the chamber, Melis's face had gone white, though her spine stayed straight. Rowan looked at Alara with 6 years of unsent truth burning in his eyes. Alara could not forgive him in that moment. Forgiveness was too far away, across too much water. But the hatred she had carried like armor cracked down the center, and beneath it, grief rushed in. Alara returned to the old boathouse at sunset. The place looked smaller than the memory that had ruled her life. The same warped door hung on rusted hinges. The same tide slapped beneath the floorboards. The same smell of wet rope, salt, and old wood rose around her as she stepped inside. 6 years ago, she had stood outside this door and heard enough to break her own heart. Tonight, she walked in. Rowan was already there. He stood near the table where the transfer deed had once lain beneath a lamp. The bandage at his throat was fresh, yet red had begun to seep through. He looked tired in a way power could not hide. Alara placed the original crystal on the table between them. For a while, neither of them spoke. Then she said, "You should have come after me." Rowan closed his eyes. The scar in his throat tightened, but this time, no blood came. The court had weakened the seal by hearing the original crystal. The cage was cracking. "I tried," he said. His voice was rough, each word dragged over stone. Before dawn, Melis had already triggered the silence clause. "If I told you about the debt transfer before the title lock closed, the lighthouse would have passed to Varric's estate." Alara folded her arms around herself. "So you let me believe you betrayed me. I thought 1 week of your hatred was better than a lifetime of you losing everything."
1 week became 6 years.
His gaze dropped. There was no defense for that. No grand alpha answer. No royal command that could soften what silence had done. Rowan reached beneath his collar and pulled down the edge of his shirt. On the skin near his collarbone, just under the scar, a contract mark spread in thin silver lines. It looked like a chain written into flesh. "Alara," he said, "your father owed Lord Varric more than coin. The spring beneath the lighthouse was named in the debt. Varric planned to claim the land, evict you, then sell the water rights to the highest pack. My father would have told me. He was trying to fix it before you knew. He died before he could." Alara's chest ached, her father, proud and sick and still trying to spare her one last fear. Rowan touched the mark at his throat. "I bought the debt from Varric with my own blood bond. The transfer paper you saw had my signature, because I had taken the claim away from him. If I spoke before the legal lock settled, the debt reverted.
Malis drafted the protection clause. I trusted her with the seal. And she cut the recording. Yes. The door opened behind them. Malis Voss stepped into the boathouse with a pistol crossbow in one hand and a contract blade in the other. Her pale hair was loose in the wind, and for the first time since Alara had known her, her beauty looked almost feverish. You make it sound petty, Malis said. Rowan turned, placing himself slightly in front of Alara. Alara stepped beside him instead. Malis's eyes flicked between them, and something bitter crossed her face. All this for a lighthouse girl. All this for a house full of dying wolves and strays. Alara's voice hardened. Say what you came to say. Malis laughed once, thin and sharp. Fine. I cut the recording. I let her hear it. I watched her leave because Rowan Calder in love was becoming a weak king. Rowan's expression went cold. You poisoned my court. I preserved it. Malis's hand tightened around the blade. The spring under that lighthouse can dilute silver sickness. Your healers knew. My mother knew. She has been rotting alive for 8 years while packs argue over borders and purity laws. The water should belong to people who know what to do with it. So you chose theft, Alara said. I chose use. You chose yourself. For one moment, Malis looked wounded, human, then rage sealed over it. She reached for the tide lever built into the old wall, a rusted mechanism Alara had never understood as a child. Rowan lunged, but Malis slashed the contract blade through the air, and the old magic snapped like a whip across his throat. He staggered. Malis yanked the lever down. Below the boathouse, chains groaned. Deep under the floor, a gate opened with a roar. Seawater surged into the tide cellar beneath them, rushing toward the hidden chamber where Gideon Wren's original records had slept for years. Malis smiled through tears. Let the sea decide what survives. Rowan tore open the cellar hatch before Alara could reach him. Cold air burst upward, wet with silver salt and tide water. Below, the hidden chamber was already flooding. Boxes floated in the dark. Old shelves cracked under the pressure. Somewhere beneath that rising water were her father's ledgers, the spring rites, the proof that could save every soul inside the Green Lantern House. Rowan looked down once. Then he jumped. Rowan! Alara shouted. His boots struck stone below. Water splashed up to his knees, then his thighs. The tide pouring through the open gate carried silver residue from the old coastal wards. Alara smelled it immediately, sharp as a blade drawn across her tongue. For an alpha wolf, silvered seawater could turn strength into poison. Rowan shoved through it anyway. Alara grabbed the rope from the wall and tied it around a beam. Malis moved behind her, trying to reach the lever again, but Tamsin burst through the open door with two court guards and old Marin behind her. Healer Wren, Tamsin cried. We followed the bell road. Malis lifted the crossbow. Marin, trembling and wild-eyed, threw his walking stick at her hand. The shot went wide, burying itself in the wall inches from Alara's head. The guard seized Malis before she could reload. Alara did not wait to watch. She climbed down into the cellar. The water hit her waist like winter teeth. Rowan was near the far shelves, dragging a sealed iron box from under a collapsed beam. His face had gone gray. Dark veins showed at his temples, and his hands shook around the handle. Alara, he rasped, go back up. She pushed through the water toward him. You have terrible timing for giving orders. The silver... I know what silver does. She reached him and pressed two fingers beneath his jaw. His pulse was fast, uneven, dangerous. She pulled a vial from her belt with shaking hands and poured bitter black tincture between his lips. Swallow, she said, stay with me. His eyes found hers, unfocused with pain. You came down. I am tired of leaving rooms before I understand them. Together, they dragged the iron box through the flooding chamber. Rowan nearly fell twice. Alara braced him with her shoulder, feeling the violent tremor running through his body. Above them, the court guards shouted for rope. Water rose to Alara's ribs. The rope dropped. Rowan tied the box first. Alara looked at him. You next. He shook his head. Do not make me argue with a dying alpha in a cellar. A broken smile touched his mouth. Still bossy. Still alive because of it. The guards hauled the box up. Then Alara looped the rope around Rowan's chest and locked her arms around him as they pulled. He bit back a cry when the wet rope crossed his scar. By the time they reached the boathouse floor, the court judges had arrived with lanterns, clerks, and enough witnesses to fill the doorway. Melis stood restrained between two guards, soaked and shaking with fury. The center judge opened the iron box. Inside were Gideon Wren's ledgers, the original spring charter, the debt purchase, and the silence contract Melis had drafted and sealed. Rowan pushed himself to his knees. His throat bled freely now. Every breath looked painful. The judge warned, "Alpha Calder, if you force speech through a forbidden contract, you may lose your voice forever." Rowan looked at Alara, then at Melis, then back to Alara again. "I never betrayed her," he said. The words cracked through the room like thunder. The silver lines at his throat flared. Rowan gripped the floor, body bowed under the breaking magic. Alara caught him before he collapsed. Melis screamed, or tried to. No sound came from her mouth. The mark on Rowan's throat shattered into fading sparks, and a matching black seal burned across Melis's tongue. The judge's face hardened as the contract revealed its hidden author. "She signed the first false clause," the judge said. "The fraud returns to its maker." Melis fell silent in the hands of the guards, her eyes wide with terror. Rowan leaned against Alara, breathing hard, alive, his voice ruined into a whisper, yet still his. Alara reached into the pocket of her wet coat and took out the silver bracelet she had carried from the medicine cabinet before coming to the boathouse. The little moonlet lay across her palm, tarnished by years, bright where her fingers had worried the edge. She looked at Rowan. "This time," she said, "will you let me choose for myself?" Rowan's eyes shone with pain and something gentler than hope. "Yes," he whispered, "even if you choose to walk away." Melis Voss was sentenced beneath the waning moon. The Court of Tides stripped her of contract authority, seized her private records, and ordered her wealth used to restore every coin stolen through her false filings. She would serve under public seal for the poor, the exiled, the widowed, and the debt-bound, writing protections she could no longer twist for power. Her voice did not return that day. Alara did not rejoice in it. She thought of Milas's dying mother, of fear dressed up as duty, of love curdled into control. Then she thought of the residents who had almost been cast out, the truth hidden in silver salt, and Rowan bleeding through 6 years of silence. Pity could exist without pardon. Alara allowed herself that much and no more. The spring beneath the lighthouse was opened under Wren charter, with healers from three packs sworn to fair use. The water would treat silver sickness, but no single crown, court, or grieving daughter would own its mercy alone. The Green Lantern House changed after that. Its gate was rebuilt wider. Its charter was carved into a stone beside the path. Shelter for old wolves, widows, orphans, the banished, the wounded, and small packs without alpha protection. No one could be turned away for lack of coin, bloodline, or banner. People arrived from beyond the northern valleys. A grandmother with failing eyes, twin boys whose pack had vanished in a border raid, a quiet beta widow who had not spoken for a month, then began singing in the laundry room. Alara found beds, broth, bandages, rules, chores, and hope for all of them. Rowan came often. At first he came for court matters, then for repairs, then to carry grain sacks, mend the west fence, and sit with Marin during the old wolf's confused evenings. He never entered the lantern room without Alara's permission. He never touched papers that belonged to her unless she placed them in his hands. When villagers bowed too low, he told them the house was not his. Some wounds heal strangely. They do not close because someone says sorry. They close because day after day a person stops reaching for the knife. Alara did not forgive him all at once. There were mornings when she remembered the boathouse and could barely look at him. There were nights when his silence from years ago rose between them like fog. Rowan accepted every cold word, every closed door, every pause before she trusted him with the smallest thing. Winter softened into spring. One evening, Alara found him in the courtyard teaching Tamsin how to reset a boundary ward without burning her fingers. His voice was still rough from the broken contract, lower than before, frayed at the edges. Tamsin laughed at something he said, and Rowan looked startled by the sound, as if laughter near him had become rare. Alara stood in the doorway with a small brass key in her hand. He noticed her and straightened. She walked to him. "This opens the lantern room," she said. Rowan stared at the key as though it were a crown. The brass had a pale silver vein running through its bow. He touched it lightly, then looked at her with sudden understanding. "The bracelet," he whispered. Alara nodded. "I melted it down." Pain crossed his face. "Alara, I was going to give it to you when I thought love meant handing over my future." She placed the key in his palm and closed his fingers around it. "Now it means choosing who is allowed to stand beside me while I keep it." Rowan held the key like something sacred. "May I?" She looked toward the tower stairs where green light waited behind glass. "Yes," she said, slowly. 1 year later, the lighthouse bell rang through morning fog. This time, there was wind. There was bread cooling in the kitchen, children arguing over chores, Marin snoring beside the hearth, and ships answering from the gray water below. Alara stood in the lantern room beside Rowan Calder as the green beam swept over the sea. His hand rested near hers on the rail, not claiming, only there. She looked at the light, then at the house below, full of voices that had survived being unwanted. And when the bell rang again, Alara smiled. "This time," she said, "the light is not calling me away. It is calling me home."